Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 23rd, 2004. Today's session number is BRD 2004-09. Today's speaker is David Browericki. And the lesson for today is God's Church, My Vocation, Discernment, Support, Blessing. You may kiss the civil union partner person. Let's listen in.
Burning mystical process. The sessions are recorded, so they like to say that. My name is Dave Browericki, and I am a parish pastor in Eastern Oregon, Christ the King Lutheran Church. The series I've been involved in discussing with you for the last 2 weeks, nobody but me has been here, but for all the sessions, but nonetheless, it's been called God's Church, My Vocation, Discernment, Support, Blessing. Today and tomorrow, we want to move into a very specific conversation around the ELCA's, Evangelical Lutheran Churches of America's, grappling with the issue of ordination of gay pastoral candidates in a relationship and the marriage or rights within the church, potential rights for union of gays. That's a difficult decision. It's one where the rubber hits the road and where a lot of us have strong feelings. So I'm going to move into it cautiously and slowly, if you will bear with me. Three categories of things I want to say before we start. First one, this discussion happens at the end of this two-week series, and that's not by accident. I have been talking for 2 weeks around the summer theme, Summer Out What We Shall Be. We've been talking about vocation. And vocation is a specifically, not uniquely, but specifically Lutheran concept that comes out of our theology and teaching from the Reformation. Martin Luther, one of the main things he did in the Protestant Reformation was to talk about the vocation of Christians in the world, trying to regain, give honor to, and empower us in our vocations to be people of God. So last week, when it's planned, that is, we talked about our vocations as jobs, what we do as nurses and bus drivers, and how we can empower people in congregations, and we had some wonderful discussions, ending with a discussion on blessing of vocation, because there's a service in your pastor's occasional services book, which has to do with blessing the vocations of individual Christians as dentists or whatever they do in the worship service. We had some great conversations about that, and that was helpful. The latter part of last week, we talked about vocation relative to the specific callings of people in the church, pastors, missionaries, deaconesses, those sorts of things. This week, we've been talking about family vocations. Not just marriage, but parenting, childhood, families, those sorts of things. So we've been, in my mind at least, been trying to move into this conversation with some groundwork. And the groundwork is that we are called into vocation, all of us, various sorts, family work vocations, that's where God wants us to be. So that's the first thing I want to say, because every once in a while I may pull the vocation card on you and say, wait a second, here's the discussion. Okay. And when I do that, you'll know it. I'll be clear about that. Second thing I want to say, if you're not Lutheran, that's okay. But if you're part of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, you may be aware of what's going on here. Let me tell you where the church has been very briefly. When the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America was formed, as the merger of three other Lutheran bodies which came together to form this church. The way Lutherans address social issues or teachings of the church, since we don't have a pope to tell us what's what, is that we discuss it, we look at a committee, the church gets involved, and we produce social statements. Social statements generally say, we Lutherans of this denomination at this period in time feel this way about that issue, by a vote of 436 to 374. and so we state our convictions as a church based on you, the church, speaking through conventions. We usually state how that vote or how that process happened, and we usually state those convictions on how serious we are about them. Are they for the teaching of the church? Are we going to conform practice around this? You know, so there's several levels of social statements. The ELCA, when it was formed, dropped all social statements from prior churches because they didn't all say exactly the same thing. All right? We retained them as helpful to our future conversations. start with a blank slate. So the ELCA, even this far into history, has no social statement on human sexuality, no social statement on gay, lesbian sexuality. You know, it's a whole lots of things we don't have, but we have prior statements. You with me? Okay. The prior statements from the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America, the two churches that had statements about gay and lesbian sexuality or human sexuality as a whole, said the following, and we will start there. That's the rule. We will start there. What those statements said was, we understand as the church, the ALC statement from where I am from was in the 1970s, we understand as a church that some people are gay. That's just the way it is. You know, yippee for us. But I mean, what we said was, we do not think this is a deviance or a form of craziness or mental illness. We agree with our scientific communities, every major branch of medicine or psychology saying this is not a problem by our definitions of what makes a problem person. Okay. So in the 1970s, we Lutherans said, we understand some people are gay. We don't know why, but it's a given. They're not sick and just variety in God's creation. So we as a church are open to gay and lesbians in our churches, in all sorts of varieties of places that we teach and live. I want to start there today. Okay. So one rule, and I will enforce it, is we're not going to go back and talk about whether gays and lesbians really exist or whether they're mentally retarded or something. Okay. I don't mean to be rude about my language with that, but that's sort of the discussion. Okay? At the same time, I do want to acknowledge that the church has not done a very good job, in my opinion, about talking about sexual deviance within both the straight and gay community and how we deal with that. Okay? I mean, there are some people who would identify them as gay and lesbian who are sexually confused. And there are some people who identify themselves as straight who are sexually confused. And there are people in the gay and lesbian community who are doing bad things like pedophilia. And there are bad people, much more, in the heterosexual community who are doing bad things like pedophilia. So we need to also talk about that, but we sort of have it all mixed up sometimes for some of us. Okay. So that's what the social statement said. The social statements from the prior churches also said the following. While we understand that some people are just gay, and we welcome them and our conversation with them, nonetheless, we're not sure what that means for their sexual lives. And essentially, what the statement said, as I understand them, is essentially we think if you're gay, that's a call to celibacy. That is, we have no way to deal with, bless, or marry you. And since the policy of the church is if you're not married, you're not sexual, and you can't be married if you're gay, therefore, if you're gay, you shouldn't be sexual. You with me? Mm-hmm. Okay. That worked for everybody but people in the gay and lesbian community. All right? I mean, and it's sort of a strange statement to come out of a church whose reforming father, Martin Luther, was very clear about you cannot take a category of people and say they're called celibacy. That's one of Luther's huge thing about the Roman Catholic priesthood. You cannot just take a category of people and say, you're all supposed to be celibate. Why, says Luther? It doesn't work. You're creating problems. So here we are with this awkward statement from the 70s, doing exactly what we said we couldn't do with the Reformation, taking a category of people and say you're called to be celibate. But let's understand that as part of the process of coming to grips with who we are as the body of Christ. All right? So, are we clear there? And for those of you who know more about social statements, is that relatively accurate? We have known as the ELCA, the prior statements welcomed people who are gay and lesbian, understood them to be fully partners with us of a different sexual orientation, but we were not really sure what to do with them. Or you, if you have to be one of them. Okay. So that's the second thing I want to say. The third thing I want to say is that if you are a member of an ELCA congregation, your pastor or somebody should have received a couple mailings like this within the last 2 or 3 years. They're study guides called Journeying Together Faithfully. One of them is a discussion guide meant to be used in congregations around issues of human sexuality with the folks on gay and lesbian perspectives on that. background in SEM biblical texts, so this did the Bible study. Okay? If you have not done these in your congregation, when you go home, would you please knock on your pastor's door and say, what happened to the Journey Together Faithfully stuff? I would like to talk about that in my congregation. All right? Because if you don't talk about your congregations, your church in another year or two may well make a decision, and you're going to go, why didn't they ask me about that? They did! Okay? As a pastor, I will repent for the rest of us. We are very bad gatekeepers. A lot of the stuff comes to our desk, and we deep six it because we don't want to get in trouble in our congregation, and nobody will come anyway. If you ask and say, we need to be talking about this stuff, all right? You can get those conversations going in your congregation where they need to happen. So that resource is available. We will not be doing Bible study today around issues in gay and lesbian perspectives from the Bible. That's not the purpose of this class. I'm able to do that. I'm glad to talk with you afterwards, but that's not our goal. Okay? So those three things. All right? We're approaching the issue from the lens of vocation. That is, to what are we called as God's people? And the specific question is, how do we understand or be in conversation with those who feel called to same-sex marriages or committed relationships? All right. How are we as a church, this is more tomorrow, how are we as a church to deal with embracing people called to those sorts of vocations? Okay, that's the first thing. Second thing is where we've been as a Lutheran church, the form of social statements, and what we are and aren't doing. We all right? Speak now or forever hold your peace. We're about to launch forward.
Yeah.
Okay. On Monday, we're starting now. On Monday, I presented to you a case study, the Lofton family, Steve Lofton family, which was also part of the forum last night if you were there. And what I was trying to do, besides just make trouble for the fun of it, with the Lofton family, was ask you, is this a family? Now, that's a black, white, win-lose question. But everybody said, yes, that's a family. And if you were not here, it had to do with a family who had Steve Lofton, who had taken in 6 HIV-positive kids over his life, family life, was raising one of them. One of those kids, after having lived for 13 of the child's 13 and a half years, is no longer being HIV-positive. The state of Florida says, we're not going to adopt this child to you, we're adopting to somebody else because you're a gay person. That was the case. And I think we were all in that class on Monday sort of unanimously appalled that the state of Florida or any government would pull a child from a clearly, obviously functional, loving family, the only family the child had ever known, just because the foster care parent and his partner were gay. All right? That's what we talked about on Monday. On Tuesday, I changed the question. Tuesday, I changed the question from, is this a family? Because that's a win-lose question. All right. To, what types of families are out there in the world? Alternative, non-traditional family structures. And you mentioned a lot. Anybody remember what we mentioned? Or would like to make them up now?
Single parent.
Adoptive.
Adopted children.
Grandparents raising kids.
Siblings.
Raising kids. Siblings raising kids.
Blended families,
remarriages, and then all of the above, somebody said relative to gay or lesbian parents as well, you know, adoptive parents, blended families, remarriages, all sorts of families. And so we articulated all sorts of, for lack of a better term, non-traditional families that exist in our world, our neighborhoods, our church, our congregation, which are not the Adam and Eve model, right? It's a variety of non-traditional families. And we also drew those family models from the scriptures themselves, saying that all the New Testament, both primarily the Old Testament, are full of families that aren't the traditional model. And what is the biblical word to the church about those families? Anybody pick that up? Yeah, see, I think both in the Old Testament Mosaic Law and the word of the prophet, there's this clear, resounding theme. You must take care of the foreigner, the widow, and the orphan. who have fallen through the structures and are at risk. I don't read in the Bible very often, this is a family that's not a family. Sometimes you do. And usually we think of the bad parts of the text and usually get pounded by the prophets for doing exactly that. But that's not the biblical question. The biblical question is, what are you going to do with Ruth and Naomi? You know, what are you going to do with this family? What are you going to do with that family? And the prophets again and again speaking for God say, if you do not attend to these people, how can you claim to be my children? So, I think as Christians, is this a family is not a helpful question. As Christians, I think the helpful question is, given what God is doing in the world, or what sin is doing in the world, or whatever, what we have, how are we called through our vocations to serve? So that's the vocation card. We're going to talk about gay, lesbian marriages or families in this class. My question is, what is God trying to summon out of us and those families? And how do we discern that? How do we support God? And tomorrow, do we or how do we want to bless that? You with me? Now, however, other people are called to make is this a family judgment? The state, the government, is indeed called to make very difficult judgments about whether this is a family or not a family. At last night's forum, there were some women here who shared their stories about abusive relationships. Sometimes the state comes in and says, you're a bad husband. You can't do that. This is no longer a family. Right? I mean, it's not that easy, but you understand what I'm saying. Or, this child does not belong here. Is no longer a family. Now that's what's going on in Florida with Steve Lofton and his foster child care, Bert. Is the state is saying, this was never your child, this has always been our child, foster care, it's always been our child, we can put them wherever we want. And our hearts go, that's so wrong. The judges who've heard the case go, that's the law. Martin Luther says, those of you who are state legislators, judges, and attorneys, you better be doing your job because this is a tough issue. You with me? Huh? So vocation is tough, and we're Christians, we are called to these positions in the secular world, and we got to do our job. That's hard. Okay? But the state is often called to decide if this is a family or not a family. I do not believe, personally, that we as a church are called to look at those to whom we are sent in service and say, these are families and those are not. I don't think that's our calling. Our calling is one of service. But of course, in service, we have to make some distinctions and decisions, right? And as the ELCA decides to vote next summer, unless they change their mind, on what we're going to do with gay and lesbian couples in terms of rights of blessing, we're going to make that decision, right? Maybe not whether this is a family or not, but how we're going to deal with it. So the rubber hits the road for us somewhere, too. So let's start this again, specifically focusing on the issues of gay and lesbian parents or partners. How many of you saw the Steve Lofton thing on Monday or saw it in the forum? Some of you did. As a committed gay couple, I'll make up a situation we'll deal with. A couple, lesbian couple, committed. Susan has a child from a former marriage, and both of them together have adopted a daughter. Is that a family?
Yes.
Okay. Are the two adults in the family parents? That was sort of the Steve Lofton question. If you were going to say, this is a family, and those people are parents, and I'm sorry for the arrogance here. I mean, who's not going to say that? I mean, is it even a question? But nonetheless, it is a question. Why is it a question? Florida is the only state in the union that will not allow gays to adopt. Of the remaining 49 states, roughly half of them will let a gay couple co-adopt, so they're both legal parents, all right? And the other half will only let one person, a single, adopt, okay? But the move in our culture to allow a single person to adopt a child, which opened the door for gay or lesbian people to adopt children, happened 10 or so years ago, maybe a little longer now?
10, 15
years ago, okay? Foster care has been going on for longer than that, okay? So has the culture not already decided that gay and lesbian people make good parents? Yeah. I mean, we have. We've decided that as a culture. When we've changed those laws, we've seen absolutely no reason to change them back. So good for us. So we have families, okay? Now here's my question. If you've got a family like Steve Lofton, we'll use him as an example again, okay? Two men in a committed relationship. We have to use the term committed relationship, which is awkward. Why is that awkward?
Because it's not legally recognized.
Yeah, we don't know what it means. It's not legally recognized. I mean, my oldest son, who's just finished his freshman year in college, called up kind of midway into the year and said, "I'm going steady." My response was, "What does that mean?" Just like pre-engagement? Is this just, you know, I mean, should I worry about that? Do you need counsel about that? What does this mean you're going steady? You know, is this not a thing that has, you know, universal recognition? A committed relationship between gay and lesbian couples that I've talked to means that we have an understanding between the two of us and would like you to share that with us. But it's not legally recognized, so it doesn't, you know, the rubber does not hit the road there. So it's awkward language for the rest of the culture as well as for the couple involved. But we can't say we're married because we don't have the authority to do that. Okay, so you've got a couple who's got a committed relationship and they've got biological children or foster children or adopted children. You say that's a family. Why would we not marry Steve Lofton and Roger Croteau?
It's never been done yet.
Okay, just logistically, we don't know how to go about it.
There are so many rights and privileges that attach to the word married in our legal system, you have no idea how many things accrue to that.
Okay.
And that gives rise to question.
Okay, but we're leaving the church out of the conversation for a minute. This is a state question. This is a state question, okay? We haven't done it before, so we just don't know how to do it. There are benefits to marriage, yes?
Very much
so. I read somewhere there's only 1,000 legal supports and benefits to marriage on the federal level, and several hundred on a state level. Can somebody name a few for me?
Visitation
at the hospital, taxes. Estate taxes are great benefits if you're a married couple.
Inheritance.
Community property.
Not so much there.
Custody of children.
Depends on the state, perhaps.
Right.
Custody of children.
Abuse shelters support. Right?
I said that, and I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, but there are some protections around abuse of spouses.
Homestead law protection against creditors.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but she does. there's lots of things. There's a gay couple in the town where I live, and I was talking to them once, and they said, you know, we have tried to mimic marriage through other legal documents, but we take all of our papers every time we leave the state. And I'm still not sure if we got in a car wreck if they would let me in the emergency room for my partner. Okay, but there's lots. Why are there all those supports? What are all those supports and things about? Why do we do that for marriage?
Protection of the family.
Protection of the family?
Stability for children.
Stability for children, protection of the family. My sister Jan, she's an attorney. I think she knows what she's talking about. So my question is, if we're going to recognize gay parents in adoptive situations, why would we not want to support the children with these thousands and hundreds of legal supports? I mean, can anybody explain that to me? Why would we not want to do that?
Fear.
Fear of what?
It's hard for me to understand, but I fear of change, fear of... you know, you hear about people being fearful of kids even being around,
fear, and quite honestly, fear that somebody's going to catch the gay thing, which straights are just not comfortable with. I mean, is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's seen as unhealthy.
Okay.
And also, the people who make the changes probably are not gay. And so there's either fear or ignorance.
Okay. So even though the social statements of the ALC say this is okay, we're not all convinced yet. So there's fear in our culture about what homosexuality is, what it implies, morally what it will do to our kids, ignorance, and the other thing you mentioned, which is not a fear thing, the other thing is who's in power, who's making the decisions. Okay? Anna, Laura?
There's also, I think, a level of comfort with the way things have been for the past 100 years or so, and people are hesitant to change the system that they know and that's comfortable and that's been working so far, afraid of, I think what we were discussing a little bit before was losing some intangible or unexpressible special thing that is a family or is marriage.
Level of comfort for whom? Mm-hmm. At whose expense?
Yeah.
I mean, you're right, but level of comfort for whom at whose expense? That's part of the who's in power question, I think. Anna?
And I also think there's the, in my opinion, misguided belief by some that it's still not the ideal family situation. So why should we say that this is just as good? Kind of like, are you going to bless a single parent household? I mean, maybe you could, but there are people who don't want to admit that that can be just as good of a household, if not better, than a heterosexual.
There's a lot of discussion about what's the ideal home. And the ideal home is where you, a lot of people say we have both male input and female input, and that's part of God's plan, ignoring the fact that the number of single-parent homes are huge.
I'm just going to say that.
Yeah. Or ignoring the fact that a lot of gay homes understand that as well as you do, and will go out and find aunts and uncles or friends or people at church or whatever to do that sort of thing, you know. But yeah, there's that kind of fear.
I think until more recently, there wasn't the expectation that gay couples would have children. You know, would have children, or certainly either adopt or have them naturally born, and with medical breakthroughs, we see a lot more gay couples having children. So now it's put family in the forefront in this relationship. I don't think 25 years ago it was very common.
Okay, and let's talk about that piece for a second, too. All right? Up until recently in history, a family with a gay head of household was virtually non-existent, except for some places perhaps in history, but it didn't happen because we didn't have medical technology that would allow in vitro fetalization or surrogate parenting or whatever, okay? So you had to get pregnant like the rest of us the good old-fashioned way, okay, which is uncomfortable, okay? You couldn't acknowledge that. Adoptions happened, but interesting thing about being gay in the world, my gay friends tell me, is that it is a sort of minority presence where up until recently you didn't know you weren't the only one. Jews have experienced a lot of oppression against them all through history, but they know who they're Jews, they can share their stories and their strategies for survival, right? Okay. Blacks throughout history in the 60s, you know somebody who's black when you see them. Okay, you can share your stories, you can stand together and make a statement, right? If you're left-handed, anybody here left-handed? Okay. Were you forced to cut in grade school with the other hand?
Yes.
Okay.
No scissors with the left hand.
No scissors? There wasn't scissors for you. You were forced to change that. Could you tell by looking at somebody, oh, there's a left-handed person? It doesn't happen. I mean, for a lot of kids who are left-handed, grew up in their small towns, they may have been the only one, and you go, why am I weird? Right? Okay. I mean, it's not seemingly a big deal, but, you know, why am I weird? Or why are the two of us weird? But mom and dad aren't necessarily left-handed, right? And there's no passing out of stories about what happens to you if you're left-handed in the world and why you got to deal with it. You're left out there by yourself. People I've talked to are gay, or authors who've written say, being gay is like that. You think you're the only one. There are nobody to share stories with. There's no oral history of survival as a gay person, you know, until recently, where we could write and do those sorts of things. So with that understanding, cultural understanding, with that ability for people who are gay to find others who suffer the same similar oppressions, you can start to have conversations and culture starts to change, and now you can adopt kids. Now we've got a whole new issue as a culture.
I think for change is always is scary for people, and this the change has been so rapid in many ways when it comes to both divorce, blended families. I mean, you know, my son's family just it wasn't easily explainable. Who are all your relatives? You know, you can't just explain it easily. And I think that's really more, you know, it gets more fearful to a lot of people because it's like everything around them feels like it's changing.
See, now that's a wonderful, wonderful point. With all these families that we've got, whom we're called to serve and be in community with, part of how they got there are social changes like divorce being more common, okay, blended families being more common. Single parents tapping for a lot of room, mobility reasons, mobility that changes, support of extended families, just changing social mores, birth control, huge issue in terms of how we run families and what's going on in life, all that sort of stuff. Part of what's going on, I think, is the culture's going, whoa, just stop, okay? Women's issues, women's rights, now gay rights, when is this stuff going to end? You hear that, when's this going to end, okay? So rather than intensifying our call to the widow and the orphan and get down and doing the work of the church, we get sucked into the enough's enough. And it's a biblical pattern we see in it's a pattern we also see in the Bible. When the people of Israel just say, all foreign wives, out of here. You know?
I think one concern people have is there are a lot of indicators that our kids aren't doing as well as they were. And so people are trying to figure out why. And it's obviously not fair to blame that whole thing on gay people. But a lot of people are saying, what's going wrong that our kids are getting more violent and they're getting more suicidal, et cetera, et cetera? You know, what is the problem?
Yes, yes. Number one, there's bad stuff going on in the culture, and we see it in our kids. Number two, it is not fair to blame it on gay people, but the cultures always blame it on somebody. If it ain't the blacks, let's blame it on the queers. And the most consistent group at the bottom of the oppression pile historically in Europe has always been gay and lesbian people. Least able to defend themselves, least able to organize. Okay. The same thing happened for my wife, who's a midwife. Remember when the malpractice church started getting jacked up? Remember? The crisis is still happening. Do you know who the first group to get hit was? Midwives. Why? I don't know why. They're little. There's no money to be made from them.
But
they're also women, and they're not organized, and they don't have a lobby. Mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah, it's not fair to blame that stuff on homosexuals, but we're doing it all over, aren't we, in our culture?
But I think there is some understanding that has something to do with families, too. Kids in strong families do better. So that enters into it too. Like something about families, you know, maybe it's divorce, I don't know. Something about family change seems to be related to how our kids are doing. And so how do we interpret that?
Okay. That's where we're gonna go now. It's a wonderful transition for us. I wanna move from the government discussion to a church discussion. And before I do so, I want to say this. This is my personal statement, so you can exit out if you want, but I'm the leader, I get to say it. In terms of our call to the variety of family structures that live in our culture and being a Christian, okay, I wish my church would put 1,000% of its energy into social governmental changes and allow civil unions or marriages to happen on a governmental basis. It makes no sense at all to me to say, you're good parents, but we're not going to support you in your vocation. I don't get that at all. I don't get that at all. If we are saying foster care is good, adoption is good, committed relationships, you know, why would we not support those family structures the same way we support any other family structures? Okay? That's not a church issue. That's a government issue. It's a government issue. They're the ones who are called to do it. That's my personal opinion. Okay? And quite frankly, I think if I were gay or lesbian, I'd feel the same way. to make the sign of the cross over us would be nice, but what we really would like is dependable legal document that will allow us to visit our spouse in a hospital or something. All right, now the church discussion. Are you okay to make the shift? Are we ready to go forward? Because what we're doing in the ELC is not a government decision. What we're doing in the ELC is decide what we want to do churchy-wise. All right? We will not next year, when we vote on bias to the way that service is run. I was trying to say, why is the teaching of the church that way? What are we trying to protect? And I think that's sort of your question. What is it about families that are unique, that the church wants to say something about? All the government stuff is part of that, right? Lutheran polity is, there's no marriage in the church without marriage in the state. Luther said, this is not a sacrament, it's the responsibility of the government. So marriage for us is always a government issue as well, you know? So we're concerned about all the stuff the state's concerned about, okay? But there was an interesting twist, and let's just start here for fun. Yesterday, as we looked at the service in the green hymnal and the service of the red hymnal, we noticed a few things had changed. One of them was a prayer disappeared. How many of you were in that class yesterday?
This is just fun.
This prayer from this, the red hymnal today was the former predecessor, service of marriage, published in 1955. The green hymnal came in 1978. This prayer just sort of disappeared from the wedding service. And it's not under burial of the dead. Aha, here it is. Listen to this prayer and tell me why it disappeared. Almighty God, creator of mankind, who only art the wellspring of life, bestow upon thy servants, that is the couple of being married, bestow upon your servants, if it is your will, the gift and heritage of children, and grant that they may see their children brought up in your faith and fear, to the honor and glory of your name, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. What's that prayer saying?
God, kids.
Children.
Dear God, give this couple kids. Were you aware that that prayer disappeared between the red hymnal and the green hymnal? Why do you think it disappeared?
Some people have chosen not to have kids.
Okay. Some people have chosen not to have kids. I'm sorry?
Overpopulation.
Overpopulation. Well, I'm sure it's a good idea for married couples to have kids.
David, for Bertie and I have been married 5.5 years, that wouldn't have applied.
Okay. More variety from who's getting married. Couples coming at older age, later age, all sorts of things. Anything else?
Birth control.
It's now an option not to have kids. What's the Roman Catholic Church stand on all this?
They have that prayer on the service still. They have a program under like that.
Do they? I would think so.
I would say, I find great movement, but they do. They do love it. I think everyone should. It does say something.
What does it say? What does the prayer say? What does the prayer imply about the church's understanding of marriage?
It's for having children.
Purpose of marriage is to have children. Okay? That there is something about marriage and having kids that all fits together. Okay? Why did we leave the prayer out? You said, well, what you said to me was, we don't think that anymore. Did you say what you said to me? Nobody said those words. What you said was, we're choosing not to have kids, we're married later in life, a world overpopulation, we're not so sure having kids is always a good idea if we're all people. Did
it
you?
It seems to be the couple's decision. It's not part of the ceremony that directs them to do that.
Listen to the prayer. I mean, yes, listen to the prayer. Almighty God, creator of mankind, who alone art the wellspring of life, bestow upon these servants, if it is your will, children. Whose decision is it according to the prayer?
God's will.
And why would you pray that? Think pre-birth control world.
Some people don't have children.
Everybody should have them unless for some reason God feels that they can't. They should.
Follow this, right? Okay? Pre-birth control. There was no sex, as traditionally defined, without the possibility of children, right? Nobody's saying right. I mean, wasn't there a time when sexual intercourse between a man and a woman naturally implied openness to God's will that you might have children? And in cultures where you depended upon children, it wasn't a blessing to actually have them. And in patriarchal culture, it wasn't a blessing if they were a son. It's not all good stuff, but I mean, okay, right?
It was an embarrassment not to have.
Barren, I think, is the word. Yeah. Which never applies to the men, of course. Right? Okay, so there's a definite tie there between marriage, sex, and children. change our definition of marriage and drop children out of there?
No.
That's a bad question. It doesn't go take us anywhere. But do you realize that that shift happened now that we look at it? All right? What's the usual Protestant definition or understanding of sex at this point? Something like, sex can produce children, but it's a gift of God in marriage for increased intimacy and deepening of relationship, right? You want to say that? The Roman Catholic Church does not want to say that. You understand? The Roman Catholic Church does not want to say that. All the rest of it, Protestants, do seem to want to say that. And actually, most of the Roman Catholics want to say that, because they're using birth control, okay? Okay. We've changed our understanding of what sex is about. We've changed our understanding of perhaps what families are for, our definition of families. Are we doing okay here? We've reflected that in our marriage service. I want you to think about that. Is that okay? Nobody's saying. Think about that.
I think in our culture it's sort of that concept that sex is no longer related to children, but actually it is, and that's why it takes people by surprise, like teenagers, because they're hearing this myth that sex and children aren't related, but in reality they still are.
So
people get trapped.
This is the question, you know? And in our gut, we're still all Roman Catholic. I mean, to a certain degree. God created Adam and Eve, right? Why did God create Adam and Eve? It's natural, right? Because sex is about having children, right? You know? Kids go, oh, it is? You know, like, you know, but that's not new. That's happened a lot. But I think in our world, and it's not been a very conscious process, but in our world, in our church, we've said, you know, Garden of Eden's got some serious problems with it for us right now. World population, bias against barren families, pain to people who choose not to have, you know, people who do not call, who may feel called to the vocation of marriage but not parenting. How do we deal with them? I believe our culture and our church now says sex can produce children, but sex has an intrinsic value apart from children. Think about that, please, with me. Sex can produce children, but sex has an intrinsic value apart from children. The whole Protestant world says that. The Roman Catholic Church does not say that. The Roman Catholic Church says sex defined apart from the openness for children is sin. And that includes use of birth control, masturbation, or homosexuality, which is considered by the Catholic Church to be mutual masturbation. Okay? That's what the Catholic Church is. The rest of us are saying, well, so what do you want to say about sex apart from the openness to have children? Or do you want that prayer back in the next service? Mark?
I just wanted to complicate things just a little bit. The Garden of Eden problem is an interesting one because the early church fathers had huge debates as to whether or not, A, there was sex prior to the fall, and B, whether or not that kind of sex led to having children. The problem being that if you have immortality, everlasting life, and you begin to have children, things are going to get kind of messy. After the fall, with death, the onset of death, finitude, then you have a whole different understanding of the place of human sexuality. So, I mean, you said there's a problem with the Garden of Eden. It depends whether you mean pre or post lapsarian, in a way, in terms of having children be the natural outcome of a union between a man and a woman.
Okay. Yes, that does complicate things. Appreciate the input, but let's not go there.
No.
Let me ask a similar question. Would you like this prayer from the Red Book put back in the next version of the Lutheran wedding service?
No.
Why not? Because?
For the reason I stated, it wouldn't apply to us. We'd have to eliminate it in some way.
Okay, it would. And if I were your pastor marrying you as an older couple and I knew you were probably beyond childbearing age, actually didn't want to have children, I probably would just drop it and skip it. But yeah.
Yeah, that's one argument to put it back in, is that's the idea that people, you know,
Dear God, I ask you to bless Laura and Steve. And I know Laura has 2 years of law school left, but we sure hope she gets pregnant on her honeymoon and has a child. You don't want me praying that, do you? But you're saying it should be an option to include, which means that then pastors in premarital counseling need to talk about the place of children. And now your question, are we having that conversation? Your question about the value of children and how family runs, you know. What do you want your pastors to be saying to a heterosexual couple about having children?
I think we've sort of lost the idea that children are a gift. And someplace it needs to be said that children are gifts in our lives.
Okay.
And there's no place I see in the new version that does that.
We could, it's not very clear in the new version being the current version. But we could also do that with gay couples, couldn't we?
Sure.
Dear God, if it be your will, open the doors to adoption or foster care or a successful in vitro fertilization. Or it gets a little awkward, you know. I don't know that we put in vitro fertilization in many prayers in the church, but you understand what I'm saying, right? There's no reason that would have to be exclusive anymore.
I like the idea that children enough is significant to warrant its own blessing. I mean, you know, we have like baptisms as the only thing I think of as welcoming a child to the church, but maybe it's important to say that marriage is more about that couple for the moment. And yes, family is the option, but now in our culture, people think of marriage as marriage between two people, and that's a very significant thing, and that stands, may be able to stand alone outside of children. And then, because
yeah.
I agree, children are a gift, but not everybody wants.
Well, you may not agree if you're in poverty.
Yep.
And giving birth to your fifth child.
That's
you may not agree with this. And I think as a whole, we as a church are saying children can be a gift and are a gift, but maybe not a gift for everybody. But certainly, once again, we have removed that from the vocation of marriage as a given, I think.
When my parents were married, my mother was a Catholic and my dad was Lutheran, back in the days where Lutherans and Catholics weren't too friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And
we assume they were.
they were, yes. And I can remember the stories as I was growing up that my mother had two children, and the doctor said she really shouldn't have any more for many different reasons. And then her priest wanted to know why there was such a long space between children. And her question to my father the next day was, what is the Lutheran view on birth control? And that's actually, she started talking, but what got her in the Lutheran church was she was told it is to be responsible in your decisions as to whether or not you should be having children. And to her, that responsible idea was the most important thing, because she knew our neighbor down the street was told by the priest that she had to have sex with her husband and they couldn't have birth control, and she died with her ninth kid and the kids were running all over the neighborhood. And she did not feel that was responsible choice making. So I think maybe we somehow have to keep that idea in there. It's a choice, but it's a responsible choice. It's not a selfish choice per se, but you've made a responsible decision.
Please notice that the difference around the word choice between the prayer, whose choice was children according to the prayer?
God's
choice. Whose choice is it as we're having our discussion?
Parents'
choice. That's a shift. That's a huge shift, okay? That's all I'm trying to say here. It also is now a choice for gay and lesbian couples as well, through a variety of means. And that's why we have a diversity of families. But my real genuine say something.
I just want to say, isn't it nice to have the statement that marriage is the place for children? I mean, I think by taking this out in some form, we take away the emphasis that marriage is the place for children.
Well, it's nice to say marriage is the place for children if you're going to include gay and lesbian couples.
That's fine.
But this, if we have a moment, but I want to summarize here because I want to tell you where I'm trying to go today, all right? Let me do it this way. Mm-hmm. I went to visit, I live in Oregon, and Multnomah County in Oregon is currently giving marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples. And a lesbian couple from my community went over and got married. So I went out to visit them and, congratulated them and rejoiced in that with them. Talked about it. One of the women said, you know, one of the best things is I now know what to call said, what do you call Michelle? She goes, well, my wife. And my first internal reaction was, no, that doesn't work. Wife is complimentary to husband. Wife is not complimentary to wife. And I said, well, I said, that doesn't work for me. And I said, can't you use spouse? You know? She goes, you don't use spouse. You know? But the words themselves, husband, wife, and the word marriage, part of my question for the religious community is, are those words so heavily laden with fertility that we can't stretch them to gay couples? I think that's part of the fear thing we were talking about and the uncertainty thing we were talking about, and I think it has to do with this undiscussed issue about what we think marriage is. So if we're going to discuss marriage as a place for children, but can broaden that out to say choice to have children or not to have children, or choice to have children by adoption, you know, natural means or whatever, I think we can reclaim something of value to the church and include gay and lesbian couples. But I think we're asking the wrong question. The question we're asking is this immoral? You know, so I think when we come at it through vocation and family and children, I think we're starting to have a different discussion here. Does that make sense to anybody? Because and this was your comment too, or part of what I heard your comment being is, you know, I'm not sure we in the church know what we mean by marriage anymore. I'm not sure we in the church know what we mean by marriage anymore, because the concept has gotten so battered around in the last 100 years, and we've tried to stretch our concept of family, not just marriage, our concept of family, to include single parents and divorced and blended families and older people getting remarried and women's rights and changing roles in the family. And part of what I've seen is people just saying, no more. If we're talking about saying homosexuals, we're just done with this decision, we'll go back to the way it was, which of course it can't do. Can we reclaim a healthy concept of marriage and family, which we need to do, and that process, keep it open? Does that make sense? Any thoughts about that? We're sort of out of time, but.
I have a question, which is, I think it's two different things to say that the children equation should include marriage, and that the marriage equation should include children.
Okay.
Because it's one thing to say children should be brought into a loving household, but is it important to us that we say in a marriage children should be part of that deal?
Okay. 2 days ago we tried to talk about the schema, the marital schema, archetype, norm of Adam and Eve, and I'm trying to say in families we would like to see two adults in a committed relationship and kids. Some people want to make one male, one female, but that's preferable to male and female is preferable to female, female. Two women is preferable to a single parent. I mean, we might set up a hierarchy, we don't want to do that. But the question was, what do we want to preserve here? Anna, what I heard you say is, we do in the church want to preserve a sense that loving parents and children are a set. But we also want to deal with the diversity of family types. And we need to learn to articulate that as a church well. Okay? Lost my train of thought.
Is that true, David, that the church, I mean, this is not to take away from, you know, single parents who have children. And, you know, we've many people we know who have intended to stay single and have had children either naturally or adopted. And so I'm a little confused about what my... I'm not trying to take away from that. I guess I was trying to avoid having children out of wedlock and then not making a marriage commitment. So I'm not sure what the church's view is on that. I assume that's the church's view.
I'm not clear on the question.
I guess it's the church's view is that they would prefer people to be married to have children.
Yes.
Okay. But does the church care if you're a single parent? I mean, they don't have a hierarchy.
They don't have a... That was a bad example. Scratch that.
Okay.
Rewind the tape. There's no hierarchy, but we do that in our heads as people in the world. But yeah, you know, if somebody in my congregation, a a woman gets pregnant in my congregation out of wedlock, you know, we say, oh, well, congratulations, we're sorry, we're with you, is the bottom line. You know, there's a sense that this probably isn't ideal, right? But we're certainly not going to forsake you, okay? More and more congregations were able to say to gay couples, we, your congregation, support you. We're glad to have you here. We love your kids, okay? The question that ELC is dealing with now is, will we give, not as the state or the government, but as the church, the same opportunity to be embraced and loved and recognized as a gay couple, as well a heterosexual couple? And again, the question to me is similar. Why would we as a church want to withhold from two sisters or two brothers in the faith all the sorts of supports and love and recognition and inclusion that we would give to a heterosexual couple? That's my question. It may not be your question.
Part of an answer, maybe. I think that there's a tension between trying to be supportive and those who don't want to encourage what they may see as not being the ideal situation. And those blended families include many, which we may see as ideal or not. So on one hand, we want to say, we support you and we want to be there for you, but it's like we don't want to create this flood and say, look, I think we've decided it's okay. So there's some middle ground we've got to find.
Yeah. So yes, so the things you articulated before, we might want to say no to a blessing in the church, number one, because of fear, and we don't really think this is normal after all. It's still out there and very much alive. Two, we may want to say no because of change and it's not normal, we're not quite sure how to do this. And three, maybe we may just want to say no because we want to say, well, that's not really marriage. But that's the one I'm arguing for here, because I think it's the door in. Is to say, let's talk again about families and how families are supported and the place of parents and families and the place of both the state and the church in supporting couples who head households. Does that make any sense? If I say it louder, that's the American way to make it like make sense. If we look at the vocation of marriage and family again, okay, and talk about how our call to families to support families, both quote traditional and quote non-traditional, and how we are called by God to do that. And if we recognize that both in the church and society, we are blessing gay families by virtue of saying, here are kids and we love you and we trust you, and that's all appropriate, why are we not taking the last step, both as the government and as the church, and saying, our job now, and it is our job as the church, is to articulate why this is good.
I mean, that's what I strongly believe. I think it could be a way in, but for people who are opposed, I don't know that they would even hear that.
No, they wouldn't.
I mean, the polarity is so great, so the challenge is how to understand all the issues of heterosexism and the fear that closes people's ears that they cannot even hear that.
Yes.
I mean, it's so far out of the frame of reference that they would say, well, no.
Okay, yeah, the voice of reason here. Get real, Dave. No one's going to have that discussion in my church. I mean, you know, there's lots of fear and homophobia and ignorance and all that stuff we've mentioned. We can't have that conversation, which is what this this process in the EOC incidentally is designed to help us get at. But it's very frustrating to me because it's trying to get us to unpack fears rather than get to the core of the issue, and I just rather go right to the core of the issue. But, yes, we need to talk about those fears. But I also think that part of the fear is we've lost a sense of what we're talking about anymore in terms of family and marriage. I think that concept's been so stretched that we won't let it stretch anymore. Just a rubber band going to snap back in our face around this issue, which after all is not going to hurt us. But.
So then do we call it something different?
What's your read of the secular culture right now? My read is they're saying marriage no, civil union yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
More and more, I think people are saying we could accept civil union legislation, but I hear this voice, which is part of where this comes from, but we're not going to call it marriage. a man and a woman.
The reactionary.
Why? Why?
Why? I've heard some things. Why? There are two things I think people are concerned about. One is, well, between a man and a woman, it's been done that way for thousands of years. We know how it works. The new ways, all kinds, not just gay families, but there's all kinds of new families. The data, we don't know. How well is it working for people? Are kids really thriving? Is it really beneficial for society? People aren't sure. And so I think one thing is, I don't know what studies are out there, but for people to see how it's working before they want to ratify it.
Yes, we
how
are sure. You've said this twice, it's very helpful.
Yeah.
We are pretty convinced as a culture that we're not parenting very well anymore.
Yeah.
As a whole. Mm-hmm. We're convinced about that. And we're afraid about that, and we're mad about that. I'm not sure why we've decided to blame gays for it, or have that snap back to us at this particular issue.
Or
okay.
People might be saying, people might feel, I don't know, these are things I'm hearing. A lot of people feel maybe gay marriage isn't ideal, neither is single parenting, neither is divorce, neither is any of the other things that are happening.
Right.
And so why do we want to say that they're great if we aren't sure they're great?
And what we're trying to do, it seems to me, is turn back, we being the culture as a whole, turn back the clock. Stricter, make it harder to get divorced. Get women back in the home. Try to undo all these things back to where we thought it worked. I think that's an awful long stretch back.
Yeah.
I think we're going to meet Adam and Eve again at the garden when we do that.
It's not like we want to recreate the 50s. There's a sort of ideal about 1950.
Right, right.
Without recognizing, the frustration and the rage and all the things that were wrong with the 50s that led to the 60s. And so, I'm not making a statement. I don't know where to go with this, but these are the concerns that...
It's very well said. Those are, in fact, the concerns. And those are the fears that are part of what we can't get by in this discussion. And we're not... And what's happening, as you see in the culture, is this is becoming a battleground for people again. About we don't know what, but we're fighting. That's not helpful to your church, people. Not helpful to make this a battleground about issues that we're not clear about at the expense of gays and lesbians. It's not a helpful thing to be happening in our church right now.
I was going to say, to tie this in, I think that we're going on a dangerous road trying to define the ideal family, because I think we latch on to characteristics that aren't accurate. We say the ideal family is mother, father, children, okay? But there are tons of mother, father, children families out there that are terribly dysfunctional.
Yes.
And so we hold on to what we think is safe, and that's ideal. And so then we go back to how can we really define what's ideal? And how detailed do we want to go? Can we say that ideal is, loving, supportive, conscious commitment? Or so, I don't know, something. So how
all
do
right.
we define
what's ideal? All right, you're my mom, so I can cut you off. we're 5 minutes over, and the bell's going to ring in 5 minutes. I'm going to conclude with two quick statements, and then, Mom, if you would please share with us what you want to. Number one, as you engage this conversation in your congregations with your friends, I would like to invite you to do so through the avenue of family and through the avenue of vocation, not through the avenue of morality. As we enter into discussions about homosexual and gay and lesbian people in our community through the lens of morality, we get judgmental, negative, and embattled because of our fears, which are not, in my opinion. If we enter through the discussion of family, our calling to families, the existence of all this variety of families you just mentioned, and our vocations to be called to parenthood and relationship, whether it be heterosexual or homosexexual relationships, we have a different discussion, which is helpful. So that's the first point of today's discussion. Tomorrow, if you wish to return at 9 o'clock, we'll do the last blessing segment of my series. And what we're going to look at tomorrow is the marriage rite in the renewing worship life passages stuff. This is nothing official. This is what the church is looking at, in terms of the next hymnal for the Lutheran Church, which we do. This stuff predates any decision about gay and lesbian marriages, so nothing here is written to be a rite for gay or lesbian unions. However, turn the tape off. I called the guy, one of the people who was responsible for tell me the truth about what you're doing. He said, we were not asked to write a blessing right for gay and union, and we have not done that. However, we think it might be useful if the church makes that decision. So, tomorrow we will look at the marriage service and talk again about the things that have changed and whether we like it, okay? You may go to dinner.